This week on In Good Faith, we're speaking with someone who gained some very important life experience in following what she thought was God speaking to her, or came to understand. And I'm in studio with Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And producer Ashton Rowan.
Glad to be here, Steve.
And I'm just going to be a little bit personal here and say that I met our guest, Susan Murphy, at several events put on by the Provo Community Congregational United Church of Christ. And at one of these, an interfaith event, I had just said hi to her for a few moments. I was starting to leave, and that little something said, "Go talk to Susan again. Go back." So I did. I knew nothing about her except that she's friendly and she makes really great deviled eggs, because that's what we had talked about. I said, "Who made these?" Yeah, that's the spiritual side of me.
So Susan Murphy is on the Children's Church Committee at the Provo Community Congregational United Church of Christ. She holds a seminary degree, and she told us privately that she actually attended three different seminaries, but the degree itself is from the Aquinas Institute of Theology in St. Louis. And she's co-founder of an organization called Daughters of Lot, which is an abused women's resource in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And you will hear that she has the most charming Oklahoma accent. I think it's from Oklahoma. I don't know. If she's making good deviled eggs, she might be from Pennsylvania, because I have to represent for my family.
She's definitely a woman who practices what she preaches, and that comes off very well in her interview. And she can be a wonderful example to all of us. Lots of great stories.
So this interview is going to start with this wonderful description that Susan gives Steve about attending church as a child, all these different senses that are sort of primed and evoked for her in that experience.
I had a very faith-filled mother. Mm. And when I was six, she would take me to daily Mass, and Mass for Catholics at that time was all in Latin, and there was Gregorian chant, and Mass would be at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the first grade, and it would be dark, and there would just be candlelight, and the priest in his vestments, and the nuns are singing Gregorian chant, and I'm hearing Latin, and God was a mystery to me, a total and complete mystery, and that's how I started out, I think, in life, as God being a wonderful mystery.
Mm. Boy, you filled my mind with images just with what you've just said. And did you feel like that mystery of God, did this connect with you? Was this just something you knew about, or did you feel like God knew you or was aware of you in your life?
I think I have always known through nature, through creation, the leaves, the sun, the moon, all that. I think that's always been how I knew God, that there was something greater than. It just touched me, and that was how I experienced God.
So I know that you are committed to religious communities and making events and community happen wherever you live, but there's a story to this, and I want to have you tell me about choosing at some point to get a seminary degree, because that might not be a typical thing for a lay Catholic believer to do.
No, not a lay Catholic woman.
Ah.
Okay. I think I will go back to the 8th grade. That was when Pope John the 23rd, called the Second Vatican Council. Up until that time, being a Catholic was something very private and very personal. Catholicism was your personal relationship with God. And being in a Catholic school, I was in a Catholic school for 12 years. That council was very important, and we lived it. It changed everything. And I moved from having a personal God to a God that brought me into the world, and I understood my religion differently, as something not necessarily personal, but universal and community and open to everyone. And it used to have been that only Catholics were going to be saved. And all of a sudden, the council says everybody in the world can know God's salvation. Mm. That changed me. As I then moved through being a teenager and getting married and having children. And then came a day. I was a school teacher. I was an elementary school teacher. And I loved teaching. And one day I moved to a new town and I asked to be in a low socioeconomic school. Why I did that, I do not know. But there was a pull there to do that. And when I was there, my life changed. That's the tipping point of my life. I saw things there that were so horrible. And I saw children hurt through everything that poverty brings, that I had a hard time with life. And I would come home from school and I'd just lay down on the sofa and that where I could hardly move. And my husband would look down at me and he said, "Susan, we just can't go on like this. We just can't go on like this," because I was hardly not functioning. Just the hardships of these innocent children and everything that they went through. And that's when I made up my mind I had to do something to change the world. I had to do something. And I experienced a call. The only thing that made sense to me was the gospel of Jesus. As I sat there and I looked at the world and I looked at what was happening in my own little world, and I said, the only thing that makes sense here, the only way to get out of this, is for the world to live the gospel of Jesus. This is the answer. Then I spent the next several years in meditation, prayer. Where do I go from here? What do we do? Yeah.
Asking for what is my path? What is my...
Yes. Yes. And then I didn't like the answer when I got it. And I experienced a call to the ministry. And when I told my parish priest that I was going to go to a seminary, God and I tangled over this for quite a while. And it was actually in a dream. I did dream work. That's one of my spiritualities, is that I work with my dreams. And I had a dream. And after that dream, I couldn't say no anymore. I was sure of the path that I was supposed to take. My dream was that I was in the church of my childhood, and it was a huge church. Everyone in the congregation at the beginning of the Mass was standing facing the back. And I was wondering why everybody was facing the back of the church and the wrong way. And the usher came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Follow me." And he took me through the side aisle and into the sacristy where the priestly garments are all held and everything. And then he took me out on the altar. And it was the altar that I had known all my life. And it was covered with flowers, but all the flowers were dead, every one of them. And so he took me over to the altar. You know how in Catholic churches they have an altar to Mary and an altar to Joseph over on the... He took me to the side altar of Mary, and all the flowers were gorgeous. And I took all the flowers, carried them all over to the other, threw away all the other, the dead plants, and put all the beautiful flowers from Mary's altar there on the main altar. And I turned around to look at what was happening in the congregation. And there was a veil in front of it, and the veil was torn, which is a biblical sign. Okay. And after that, I saw that the church needed a feminine as well as the masculine. And I was being called to cross that line and to bring the feminine into the church, even when women could not be ordained. I told my priest I was going to the seminary, and he told me no, not to do that until he talked to the bishop about me. I'm still waiting for that talk. And that was 35 years ago. And I cried every day because I was so scared, and I thought, I'm doing, you know, it, all the things you do. But
you were on the path that you didn't know anybody else on this path.
No, I did not. And nobody else knew what to do with me either.
Well, that's
my mother was scared to death. I was going to hell because I was breaking a rule that, bless her heart. But she came around. She started calling her friends and saying, "Talk to Susan. She'll tell you."
You really found yourself on your own path. And then when you got through there, is this when you formed the organization?
Yes. I thought, now, what is a Catholic woman with a seminary degree going to do in this world? And I thought, I'm not going to get a job. And the week I graduated, I got 3 phone calls offering me jobs, and I wasn't even looking yet. I was just resting, and I didn't even have to apply. They were mine if I wanted them. Of course, I lived in a smaller town, and lots of people knew me. Mm-hmm. And I was offered principal of a Catholic school, that which fit, and a chaplain of a bereavement chaplain, and a counselor in a domestic violence shelter. Mm. But after what I had seen as a school teacher, I just decided this is where I can make a difference. First of all, I thought when the mother of a family is doing well, then the children are doing well. Mm. And if I work with domestic violence, maybe I can ease the pain of children that way. And of course, women at the same time. So that's the job I chose, and that changed my life.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Capp Perry. Hi, I'm Stephen Capp Perry, host of In Good Faith. In our BYU Radio family of podcasts, I've got to tell you about an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. Are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? That's what Constant Wonder does. Host Marcus Smith brings us on trips and conversations with people whose lives have been touched by the beauty of the earth and exploring its mysteries. If you crave some adventure and you want to travel the earth, but it's hard to fit into your schedule, do what I do and listen to Constant Wonder, riveting conversation with individuals whose lives have been impacted and changed by their explorations of the earth's beauty and its mysteries. Constant Wonder. Wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. Today, working in the community with Susan Murphy from the Provo Community Congregational United Church of Christ. Tell me about this organization you formed.
After about 5 years of working with domestic violence, I saw that many of the women who put up with their domestic violence was because of their powerlessness, because they didn't know. They had not been taught that their bodies are theirs and that they are strong and they have a right to protect their body. And if we look at Scripture and we look at the women of Scripture, they didn't have rights to their own body. And that was beginning to make sense to me. And I also saw that many of those women had been abused as children, had been sexually abused as daughters and granddaughters. And I had a friend who was the executive director of a nonprofit counseling place. And I said, I think one of the answers to domestic violence is that women learn to love their bodies and learn to love who they are and to see themselves not as belonging to or having to kowtow to the masculine, but the feminine is strong also. And what if I worked with women who have been sexually abused? And the story of Lot and his daughters from beginning to end is a perfect story of incest, of how incest happens over and over again in cultures and in the world. So I named it the Daughters of Lot, and this was a counseling place that was supported by all the local churches in town, and they put in money, and people could come. And if you didn't have the money for counseling, it would be subsidized. So they said, yeah, this is something that we can do. Women can come here who are underinsured or have no insurance, and they can get counseling for their sexual abuse. And then it just grew and grew. And of course, pretty soon it wasn't women. It was men also. And I learned a lot there also. One of the things that I learned, many of my clients were men who were homosexual. And as youngsters and young men trying to find out and deal with their sexuality, they didn't know who they were. Mm-hmm. And they were taken advantage of over and over again by people of power who wanted to use them. And I saw that was something. So I opened that up to the Daughters of Lot also. It just...
When something happens to people in situations like that, they often end up, whether unconsciously or because someone says something to them, they end up, it sounds like, blaming themselves often. And so they don't say anything. And it sounds like you've been on this journey to take people who feel like they may have a shameful secret or maybe think they are bad and opening that up to even be able to talk about it. You've been a few steps ahead of your time, I think, but incredibly needed.
Well, I don't know how to say that or how to answer that. It's just what is in front of me to do. I like to meditate every day and stay open to whatever God has to do, and then I just take the steps that are put in front of me.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you can tell me about how you felt or saw God working in that ministry with those people.
It's the community. Mm-hmm. It's the community that gives support. It's the community who says, we know that what you have to say is true and right, and we want to be a part of that. They just support. And the town that I was living in decided that they were going to have a fundraiser for us. And we called it the Daughters of Lot Breakfast. And we would have 30 or 40 tables, and women would decorate the tables, and people would come in. And we raised lots of money for that. And it was also, they knew it was a way to say things that you don't talk about, to say it in an indirect way.
Because you could show up and be a supportive person.
Yes, and you don't have to. People don't want to talk about incest. Mm-hmm. So this is a way to honor it, but you don't have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, because it's awkward. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so meeting people where they are.
Yes.
And what they feel able to do at the moment.
Yes. Mm.
I would like to know about changes in people you've worked with, that you see God suddenly in their lives or their awareness changing. That could be anything from the women who came for counseling, women or men, or just when you do community service. So how do you see God working there with them?
When they leave my office, finally, when they leave free, when they free loving themselves, when they leave free of fear, when they can confront their pain and their abusers, it's a wonderful thing to see people be free, to experience that, and to know that they are loved by God. Incest or any kind of hatred can take God away from you, can take the good God away, and only the God of power, the angry God, exists. And you restore. You can restore the sacred to a person. They are sacred because God loves them. The sacredness is there. And it was there all along. It was just taken away or hidden because of fear, pain, things like that.
I'm wondering, I met you at the Provo Community Congregational United Church of Christ. Mm-hmm. There's been a journey there from where you started to that congregation. Tell me a little bit about your journey of faith there.
When I left the Catholic Church, a friend of mine had that I had been with in that congregation had found a church in Tulsa, and she kept telling me about it. For years, she was telling me about it, how much I would like it. And she said, this church, they do everything that you love. They help the poor. You know, my theology is primarily liberation theology.
Mm-hmm. How would you define that to someone, just briefly, to someone who doesn't know what that means?
Liberation theology is a theology that comes from the bottom, black theology, womanist theology, feminist theology, the theology of South America that comes from Guatemala and places like that where people live in poverty, where people are not understood, and finding their power in a God who loves them and lifts them up. It's a lifting up theology. Yeah. It is a theology of equality and balance.
So you finally showed up.
I finally showed up. The first thing I saw before I was even in the church, they were flying a rainbow flag. And I turned to my husband and I said, this is where we're going to be. Because that's part of that liberation of all people. And then walked in, they said, everyone is welcome here. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And that's pretty much my theology. That's my idea of who God is.
Do you have, you mentioned meditation. What connects you with the divine? Is it prayer, meditation, reading, serving?
All those things, but mostly it's creation. I have had profound experiences with, I'm out there, and I see God in every particle of creation, every drop of water, the sunshine, whatever it is, the life of God exists. And in that, I see the balance of the universe. And I think that's why I work with the have-nots in this world, because it's the lack of balance. God created a world that is balanced. It's held by gravity. It's held by the seasons. It's held together, perfectly balanced. And when we, as the people with power, the human race, get it unbalanced, then things go wrong. And that's not how God created it. It's created to be balanced. And the rich and the poor have to come together. And I spend my life trying to balance things out, I think.
That's beautiful. I love nature too, but I love your gift and hoping that I can learn to feel it the way you do. That description is really beautiful.
Thank you.
What should I ask you, Susan, that I don't know to ask you about your faith in God, about your journey over your lifetime?
I wrestle with God. Mm-hmm. I wrestle with God a lot. I have a lot of doubts. And when I don't like something, and I think, you know, I say, God, this, you have all power, and if you have all power, how come 30,000 children are dying of hunger today? Mm. You know?
And, this very day.
Yeah, this very day. I'd read that, and I got mad at God. Mm. And I said, if I had all power, I'd take care of that. And mm-hmm. we wrestle. And eventually I lose. But I lose the wrestling match. Was it Jacob that wrestled the angel?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
I always lose. I haven't won yet, but I don't give up. But I have doubts, but I always follow up. Usually my doubt is because I understand God incorrectly.
Interesting.
And I'm always saying, okay, here is my doubt. It doesn't look right to me. God, show me where I'm missing the mark here. What do I need to do? And it always comes back to, Susan, what are you going to do about it?
Interesting.
You know,
so don't ask unless you're willing to.
That's right. That's right. The thing with the 30,000 children, I said, okay, God, I'm going to pray every day to you, and I'm going to address you as to the God who allows 30,000 children to die of hunger today. And that's how I started my prayer. Not publicly, but just my private prayer. And finally, at the end of that, of several months, I said, okay, now, so tell me where you are. And the thought came into my head, Susan, tell me where you are. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, dadgummit, he told me that it's up to me. You know, he put it into me. He said, mm-hmm. I'm his hands, I'm his feet, I've got money, I can feed the poor. He put it on me. In other words, it's the human race. I created the human race, and you have to do something about it.
That was Steve speaking with Susan Murphy from the Provo Community Congregational United Church of Christ. And there's so much I love from her interview. One of the things is this humble, humble statement she says to you, Steve, it's just what is in front of me to do. Mm. And then she follows that up with, and I'm praying and I'm trying to be open to receive inspiration about that. And I think, oh, this is exactly how we're all supposed to be living our lives. Good reminder. You know, and it ties into her seeing the ache of the world, the wound of the world, and saying, if we could just live the gospel of Jesus, we could heal these things. And being inspired then as you said earlier, to go on this path where she has no mentors, she has no models, she's just going to go to seminary as a Catholic woman and we'll find out what happens next, right? That's kind of a terrifying journey. And so the courage and humility of this woman are really impressive to me.
Yeah, and then to be led with her seminary degree and then to start a counseling service, a resource service in her community for people who had been abused.
I think that Susan Murphy is a wonderful example of humility, courage, and devotion. One line that jumped out to me was when she was talking about God being a God of balance. And it's only when humans unbalance what God has created that issues arise. And I think she's an example in this, in her own attempts and often successes, to rebalance things that have come out of balance in her own life and subsequently in the lives of so many others who she assists and helps as best she can in the name of God and Christ. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, and I just love that I love this idea of the wrestle with God, right? And her example of, I'm going to pray to God and I'm going to address him as the God who let 30,000 children die today. I can think of how cathartic that is, right? Hey, I'm just going to lay at your feet this massive problem that I think you should be taking care of. Like, I totally understand that feeling. And then again, back to her humility of being open and waiting to hear what God has to say to her about it and realizing, as she says, I'm his hands and feet. I have to go out and solve this problem. I just am like sort of in awe of this courage that she has and this confidence in the Lord.
It's a useful journey to hear because we are so inundated with horrific images and news that I have to mentally prepare myself to turn on my phone in the morning to see what my calendar has, and because I'll have notifications from the news. And I'm debating whether to turn them off or not. And I think, well, I don't want to just ignore it. On the other hand, if I'm hit first thing with the onslaught of the horrors of the world, I almost shut it down because I cannot imagine what I can do about it.
Right.
So here she is. Her tipping point is teaching elementary school and hearing about horrific things that are happening in the lives of her students or her students' mothers.
Yeah.
So suddenly there's this little one example that she could possibly do something about. And how can I not let myself be so overwhelmed that I shut down to the point where I don't see the one example that God might, as she said, put in front of me to do?
Yeah, and such important work, especially, I think over the decades, we've gotten much more open, much more understanding about what children and women have gone through, the abuse that they might face. And again, here she is on the vanguard, speaking out about that, supporting people, loving them through some of the most horrible things in their lives. And the fact that she figures out a way to connect the rest of the community to it. She figured out a way to make the rest of the community feel like they too can help. And that, to me, is the real genius of Susan Murphy. She's not just hiding in a corner with those folks trying to heal wounds all by herself. She's saying to everyone else, you can help too, and I've got a way for you to do it.
Susan, starting from the heart and the mystery of God, and then adding her education and resources, really bringing in the head with the heart to accomplish good. Many thanks to Susan Murphy for speaking with us. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Cap Perry. Our production team also includes senior producer Heather Bigley, Leah King, Katarina Martinic, and Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a positive comment or review, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, Instagram and Facebook, we're InGoodFaithPodcast, and on YouTube, youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.